hour number two of Michelle and Junie. Nick Keyser in for Michelle Knezvik, who is out on vacation. I think she's at a woman's conference for in Charlotte. Like
she
for,
is.
Is it for sports related? Listen, I should know this because Michelle and I are hosts. I just know she's at some kind of promotional conference, you know, promoting women in the industry, which is always really good because, you know, we want to see good diversity and women getting their opportunities in fields outside of, you know, the norm. But
so she is at the Association for Women in Sports Media Conference.
Yep, there we go.
North Carolina.
There we go. So, you know, our own Caroline Fenton, Michelle Knezvik, we enjoy having women in here giving their perspective and having the opportunity to voice their opinion on sports. It's always good to have that. So shout out to Michelle.
Yep.
Going out and doing the due diligence for the next generation. Keep it up. You're doing great work. But we teased before the break that we were going to kind of go into some national headlines when it comes to the National Football League. And the one thing that really interests me has been this notion about the Houston Texans and what they're going to do with the number two pick. Because consensusly, or I don't even know if that's a word, the consensus has been that the Houston Texans are going to take a quarterback with number two overall. But I heard Adam Schefter go on ESPN this past week, and he had something to say about what the Houston Texans might do with the number two overall pick. We got that audio right here.
I think there's a lot of conflicting signals and information out there about what Houston is going to do at two. And I think a lot of people have assumed it's just going to be a quarterback. And in the end, I'm just not convinced just yet that that's going to be the case.
That was Adam Schefter talking about the Houston Texans and how they might not take a quarterback with the number two overall pick, which just makes things a lot more interesting, Nick. You know, because when you look at the quarterback needy teams in this draft, three of them are in the same division. And when you look at teams like trying to trade up, it makes it seem as if the Houston Texans might either, you know, trying to throw some smoke screen out about the possibility of them not taking a quarterback or what it is. But I just can't imagine with the situation that they're in. I know that the Bears originally had the number one overall pick, but they already have their franchise quarterback. If there was any team that needed to go out and get their guy this year, it would have been Houston.
You would have thought I just pulled myself a Joe Rex.
You did pull a
Joe
Rex.
Wow, I am very embarrassed by that.
Mute one for Nick Keyser.
That's one. Keep the counter up. Well, Joe and I talked about mutes last night a little bit. But look, this is an interesting little tidbit that we have from Schefter. And I mean, there's not, personally, I don't think there's too much to make of it yet. I think we need a couple more developments to come up for us to truly figure out what in the world is going on. Because could they be interested in a guy like Will Anderson over a quarterback? I don't know necessarily, but you know that while we were talking about the divisions, that's why I was bringing up, okay, it's not going to matter if they draft a quarterback over, okay, this edge rusher maybe, or if they go get a different weapon like a Jalen Carter maybe. But look, ultimately, when it comes down to how they're thinking, it's like you said, it could be a smokescreen. I think that's a fair way to put it. But when you look at all of these weapons that are out there right now, early in the first round, you know, you have Peter Skoronski, Devin Witherspoon. You know, I know Richardson's been rumored to go in that top three as well. So could they shock us and go him? I don't know. But personally, I think they need to take a CJ Stroud. I mean, it sounds like that might be a conflicting report that we have after hearing some things this week, which is very interesting to me, which you can't take someone or you can't not take someone just because of their representation. That is crazy to me. I cannot believe that would be a reason why you wouldn't take anybody. So if they don't take him for that, I would be so frustrated if I was a Texans fan, because if you are robbed of someone that can help bring your franchise out of the gutter and bring you back to the top of the AFC South, that's embarrassing if you can't get someone. So, just that is so conflicting. Like, when I heard that this week, I just didn't know what direction they would truly go in. So I think they will end up getting a quarterback eventually. I mean, truly, I think that's the case, Junie. But in your eyes, if they didn't take a guy that was a good pocket passer, who would they take?
I mean, obviously it would have to be, you know, best player available, or if I were them, I would look to trade back. The Houston Texans are in a really interesting situation here to where, you know, they just hired a brand new coach, and I know that they fired their last two coaches. I just don't think they would be willing to do that 3 years in a row. And DeMeco Ryans, I mean, he was a hot head coaching candidate, and they wouldn't, you know, he's going to get another job in a second. But with all that being said, I see Houston as, I don't think it's crazy to think that they wouldn't take a quarterback. You know, I look at next year's draft, and this is something that I've been a huge proponent of, is that the quarterback class coming out next year is a lot better than this one.
Yep.
You know, Will Levis and Anthony Richardson have a lot of question marks with their game. They have the upside, but they're going to have to go somewhere that's really refined. Hendon Hooker is coming off an ACL. He's older. Was it the Tennessee, you know, offense that really made him shine? And then Bryce Young with his size, C.J. Stroud didn't really look all that great this year until the Georgia game. There's just so many questions about these guys coming out this year that Houston might look at it as, you know, there's going to be somebody willing to trade up with us for the number two overall pick. There always is going to be. And if we trade back and we get a first-round pick next year, regardless of how our season goes, we can have assets to either move up, or we will be bad enough to go out and get our guy that we see as more of a surefire prospect for next year. And Houston has that availability. I mean, they don't have any expectations. Even if they draft a quarterback this year, we don't expect them to be a very good team. So what is delaying the inevitable in going out and getting your guy next year? It's just food for thought.
It is.
And when it comes down to C.J. Stroud and his representation and the Texans not wanting to deal with that, listen, you can call it crazy. I don't think it's all that crazy.
I don't think it is either, because you have to think, too, they had J.J. Watt for a long time.
Yeah.
They're going to want someone, in my eyes, because DeMeco's coming in and he knows what you need on that end to be a successful franchise. Remember how good they were on defense? You know, they had Matt Schaub slinging the ball around. I thought he was doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
They also had great weapons at wide receiver. And I always loved, like when I was growing up, Courtland Finnegan getting into it with, you know,
Andre
all
Johnson.
Of their entire staff. That was the one that always came to mind, was the fight with Andre Johnson. But look, this team on defense, they used to be the hardest team for the Titans to go up against almost every single year when they were healthy. They had J.J. Watt. Look, if they can get back to that, I don't blame them for skipping over a quarterback now. It's a very strong argument, I think, for them to pass up on a quarterback and maybe take someone either on the edge or take someone on the line to help build it up for the future. I don't blame them if they do that.
The thing about Houston is they actually have a really good offensive line. They just got Laremy Tunsil signed up for the next couple years. They traded with the Buccaneers. I think it was it Shaq Mason they traded from the Bucs. So, you know, they have a really solid offensive line, which is good for a rookie prospect to come in. But, you know, they have a bunch of other holes. You know, they need to go out and draft a receiver. Right now their best receiver is Robert Woods. We just saw that experiment here in Tennessee. Not really expecting a lot. And like you said, their defense isn't as daunting as it's been in the past. So they could really use this year to really patch up those holes. They got a lot of cap space and really build their team around to go out and get their franchise quarterback next year in a more solidified draft. So it's not that crazy. But another quarterback situation, and we kind of touched on it a bit earlier, has been this Aaron Rodgers to the Jets thing. Like, you know, apparently the Green Bay Packers are stuck in their heels about getting a first-round pick in some form or fashion. The Jets don't want to do that because they don't want to, you know, be the Broncos who gave up multiple first and seconds to get Russell Wilson and then fall flat on their face. Or, you know, Rodgers ends up retiring after a year and then you give up your future, you know, to build around him. So, with all that being said, like, what do you think the Jets are going to do if this Rodgers thing doesn't pan out? Because they're in a win now mode.
Oh, I can't imagine if that doesn't happen, Junie. Because, look, if he's a guy that he goes into this darkness, he's like, okay, let me think about these things and I'll come back to you. It's like, all right, make up your mind, man. Like, he's had so much drama around him for years. I know that this has just been a really, I think it's been a smidge of what he really is. If this does not happen, man, are they in a hole? Because they're going to dig themselves even deeper into their situation with Zach Wilson and what they have for their future plans. Because, look, not giving up a first-round pick, I understand that because of what happened with Russell. It's comparable in that regard because you're going to get a veteran guy. He's proven. You know what he is capable of. These are all things. These are not absolutes, obviously. You don't know what you'll get in him until he gets on the gridiron and he starts throwing the ball around and makes big plays. Then you'll know what you have. Because Aaron, no one's going to be the same every year the older you get unless you're Tom freaking Brady.
Sure.
But Aaron Rodgers going to the Jets, I think, this is just me personally speaking, are they really going to be that much better of a team if they have him?
I genuinely think so.
They could be.
Last year, you know, Garrett Wilson, you know, he won Rookie of the Year. Sauce Gardner won Defensive Rookie of the Year. They got Breece Hall, which he was looking like he could have been Offensive Rookie of the Year. They had an extremely good draft class last year
in
positions of need. They got two really good weapons going forward, which I think they're both going to be really good. If you're into fantasy, I would look at drafting them. The one thing they didn't have was consistent quarterback play.
That's true.
And, you know, with their offensive line the way that it was, they've been doing some rebuilding on that this offseason. Mekhi Becton, somebody I know personally, he played at Louisville, was a left tackle prospect that they've drafted. He's lost a ton of weight. He's done a lot of work this offseason, and he was banged up last year. And when he's back in the mix, their offensive line plays a lot better. So, you know, Mike White was getting beat up last year. I kind of think Mike White is, you know, as much as we love him as WKU grads,
he's not going to be the leader of that football team.
He was a really good backup. You know, now he's down in Miami. He's Tua's backup now. They have Zach Wilson, which he looks like a giant bust, and I wouldn't trust him with this roster because he's just going to hold them back. You give Aaron Rodgers this defense that was ranked in the top 10, hands down, probably if the offense wasn't giving the ball back so much, probably would have been a top 5 defense just based on pure talent that they have there. You have a good running game, you have good receivers, and then you put that quarterback in there, that veteran that's been there, MVP Aaron Rodgers, I really do think that that takes them over the top.
Okay, that's fair. I think that is a very fair way to go about it because that is a question I think if you're a Jets fan, you should be thinking to yourself. I'm not saying Aaron's going to come in and stink it up. I don't think he's going to be as bad as Russell Wilson was. By no stretch am I saying that. But if he does come in, if he's not as good as he was last year, but he still is able to throw the ball, be accurate, and call the plays in a good way, I think they're set up for success.
Well,
I think you have a good point.
I think he's set up as well because his former offensive coordinator two MVPs with, Nathaniel Hackett, is now the offensive coordinator of the Jets after being let go from the Denver Broncos under one season. It's interesting. It's food for thought, but you know the whole Aaron Rodgers situations, what the Texans are going to do, it all has implications on the Tennessee Titans because – if the Texans start making the right moves and start bolstering their roster and the Jets go and get a guy like Aaron Rodgers to go around their young and up-and-coming roster, this is just knocking the Titans down further in the AFC rankings,
yep,
making it a lot harder for this team that has a bunch of holes to be competitive. So we will see what is going on. But we're going to kind of get back in to the Nashville Predators coming up next. I want to talk to Nick about some of these young guys that came in and stepped in and if he believes that they will be on the opening day roster coming up. We'll also talk a bit about John Hines and his job security and what he did this season. We will get all into that next. You are listening to the Michelle and Junie Show here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
It was a fun stretch for you personally these last 5-6 weeks. Was it more fun, you know, doing what you guys did here the last 5-6 weeks and maybe, you know, with the pressure off a little bit, I guess you might say?
Well, I wouldn't say, from our standpoint, we didn't feel like the pressure was off. I mean, it's almost like you have to pivot. I mean, we weren't far out of the playoffs when we made the decision to make the moves that we made. But then it's on everybody, the coaches and players, to try to remain. I mean, it's the NHL. Your job is to be able to win and be competitive and regardless of what the circumstances are. And to me, that's what I think the coaches and players together embraced And you know, I've said it a lot. You got to be where your feet are, and you have to understand you can't look for a different situation or want something different or complain about what's going on. You have to find what are the actions and attitudes and mindsets that we have to give ourselves a chance to be successful in this situation. And that was the challenge. And I think when you coach, that's what you're so focused on, is what are the things we have to do now to try to give ourselves a chance to be successful. And you're fully embedded in that. And that's what, you know, that was the challenge. There's different challenges all the time. But I think the group we had the opportunity to work with down the stretch, that's what made it fun.
That was John Hines talking about this young Preds core. You know, whether or not there was pressure going into this tail end of the season post deadline. A lot of stuff there, Nick, that we need to get into. You're listening to the Michelle and Junie Show here on 102.5 and 106.3. The game, Nick Kieser filling in for Michelle Knezovic on this Saturday morning. So let's get into this about John Hines. You know, obviously, I think the pressure is always going to be still on when the playoffs are still on the line, and we didn't know that the Preds were officially eliminated until after the Winnipeg Jets and Minnesota Wild game this past Tuesday. That made it mathematically impossible for them to get in. But I want to touch a little bit on John Hines and his job security that he has. It's kind of been a tale of really two seasons within this season. You know, you make the playoffs last year and you lose Saros. You get swept by the Avalanche that just, you know, kind of ran through the playoffs. And it made you think that you would have been a bit more competitive if he was there. You go out and you get a Niederreiter and a trade for a Ryan McDonagh, kind of bolster this core up a bit, and you're expected to be one of the top three, at least top four teams in the Central Division, and the Preds just simply weren't that. And so they move off a bunch of guys at the trade deadline. These young guys come up from Milwaukee and from some trades that they had made, and they start playing immensely better. So with that being said, with Barry Trotz coming in as the new GM, how do you look at this John Hines coaching situation, and do you expect there to be a move made at the head coach of the Nashville Predators before the season opener coming up later this year?
The short answer, and I'll get into it, is no. But John Hines last night, I think the way he spoke about this young group and the plan that he has, I think they really bought in to the belief that they had, not just in his system and what he said between periods at practice, you know, even away from the team, talking to guys one-on-one. I've been part of teams where you have to have a belief in yourself and a belief in your coach and what they want you to be doing at your very best. And I think when you look at guys like a Tomasino, Evangelista, Kiefer Sherwood, and even a Tyson Berry, and obviously Tommy Novak, who in the back half of the year, when they get called upon, they thrived. They were great players to watch. Not to mention that, too, back on defense, we got a guy out of college that came in. We also brought in Spencer Stastny from Milwaukee, and we used so many pieces because of injury, but the way that John Hines went about his business as an NHL coach, I think, is a very fair assessment of saying he's going to be fine for now. If it doesn't work out in Barry Trotz's eyes at some point, at the early point of next season, move on from him. But for now, I would expect him to be the head coach. And players are meeting with media tomorrow, so we'll get a feel for how everybody's doing. And then we will hear from David Poile, Barry Trotz, and John Hines on Monday. Read into that with what you will, obviously. But they had a great season in terms of growth as a team. No one expected them to be out of the playoffs, quite frankly. They had so many depth signings, Junie, that I thought in the back of my head, okay, they didn't make a splash, but they did bring in guys that are capable of filling in minutes if they needed to. So Hines had a huge trust on who we had, which they've done a lot of recently, which is not popular by the fans, but he has carried them to the success of, okay, this is a cohesive thing that we have to do to get to the next level as an organization. So overall, I think that's why he's the coach for now. I don't think you'll see him down the line maybe 5 years from now, mm-hmm. because Hines is a guy that is trying to fill this gap. He's a developmental coach, obviously, from USA Hockey. Poile brings him in. He's giving him his first crack at – well, not his first crack, but one of his first few chances in the NHL level.
Yeah.
I think he's done all that he can personally.
And that kind of gets me into this. And I have been waiting to have this conversation with you in particular. We're going to kind of go through all the players that we saw play for the Preds this year. And we're going to say who we think is going to be on the opening day roster. I've made a list of locks, and if you want me to change any of these, I can.
Okay.
But I made a list of locks here that I think that will be for sure on the opening day roster for the Nashville Predators coming up on the 2023-24 season. So my locks are Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg, UC Saros, Kevin Lankinen, Colton Sissons, Ryan McDonough, Tyson Barrie, and Dante Fabbro.
Okay.
So those are my locks. Do you have any quarrels with any of those locks?
I don't have any quarrels with your locks because those are all guys that have been mentioned of coming back next year.
Yes.
Barry Trotz was talking with Jared just a few days ago saying that he's going to have a conversation with a guy like Johansson and Fabbro.
Yeah.
Those guys are back, obviously. Fabbro is a guy that I think the way that we've seen him play the last few games and even maybe last 2 weeks, I think it's a microcosm of what he can be.
Well, and they also re-signed him for next year. So with the money that they're giving him, I just assume that they're going to hang on to him. And, you know, he also highlighted Dante Fabbro's development. Right. Thought he had kind of reached his ceiling a bit. But, you know, his play this last little bit of the season has kind of showed that maybe he can take it up to another level. So I'm going to start with the maybes. Mm-hmm. And this is the guys, and we're going to kick it off with some veterans that, you know, have underachieved according to their contract, and that the Preds might potentially try and move off via trade this summer. So let's start with the guy who had lost his fingertip this offseason and was making waves with his interviews about that. We'll start with Matt Duchene. Do you think Matt Duchene will be on this Predators team to kick off the season next
year? I can confidently say he will be back.
Really? Okay.
I think he will be back. I think he had a lackluster year, obviously, along with a lot of other guys. However, the way that he plays, I don't think warrants him to be traded or moved away from the Predators. Yes, he didn't have a good year. That's fine. He did not score 40-odd goals this year like he did last year. He'll be back next year, Junie.
Okay, let's start going through this a little bit more quickly. Ryan Johansson.
He'll be here.
He'll be here, yes. Let's go into some younger guys. Cody Glass.
Cody Glass. And I have said this confidently, depending on how good of an offseason he has, I think he'll be a top six guy.
Really? Okay, top six guy. Juuso Parsonen.
Parsonen will be here.
All right, Tommy Novak.
Tommy Novak. And this is where it gets tricky because I've had this conversation before with numerous people. The way that we play with Duchene and when we had Granlund, they switched him at center. I do think Novak plays on this team. I think he showcased to be a top six guy, but look, Hines is going to have a tough choice. I think Barry's going to have a really tough choice. I feel like one of these guys that we have locked in could be traded. I'm just telling you what I think warrants them to stay, but I do think Tommy Novak is here next year solely because of what he has proved here in the short time that he's been in the NHL. He had the same points as Forsberg up until last night. He just passed Forsberg by 1 point. To finish the season.
Absolutely. I think Tommy Novak has to be on this set. But let's get into some other ones. Kiefer Sherwood really quickly.
No. I don't think Kiefer Sherwood will be on the Nashville Predators roster to start next year.
Okay, so potentially in Milwaukee. Okay.
Now, go ahead.
Another guy, Luke Evangelista.
Evangelista, I think, is the odd man out that starts in Milwaukee.
Okay, so that's a no. Some other interesting ones that we have down here, Jake Livingstone,
interesting, because we've not seen enough of him, I think, even though he is a good shutdown guy. This is tough. I haven't seen enough. My gut wants to say, yes, he'll be in the NHL on the bottom pairing.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can sign him to a two-way deal, I would like to have him start in Milwaukee.
Okay.
I personally would like to see him start down there.
Start in Milwaukee. Listen, we didn't get to all of them, but we got to some of the key ones that are really interesting. I think Luke Evangelista, I mean, we saw what Tommy Novak did when he, you know, when he came up last season and only got 7 points in that 27-game span. And how greatly he improved when he got sent back down to Milwaukee. I think that could be really good for a guy like a Luke Evangelista. So coming up next, we're going to be talking to Jay Moore, former Nashville Predator and current radio analyst here for Preds Games on 102.5 The Game. We're going to kind of dive into the John Hines, the young guys, and just encapsulate what it meant for the Preds to end the season the way they did. You are listening to Michelle and Junie here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Welcome back into Michelle and Junie. Nick Keyser filling in for Michelle Knezovic. Just got done talking about the Nashville Predators season as it concluded against the Colorado Avalanche last night. And to kind of recap last night's game and to talk about the season the Nashville Predators just had, we have Jay Moore on the line, brought to you by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, former Nashville Predator and current radio analyst. Jay, how are we doing this Saturday morning?
Hey, doing great, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, Jay, well, thanks for coming on. And, man, what a game last night. But let's go ahead and get started off here because you gave me your business card last night, and it is one hell of a business card. So thank you for passing that along.
Oh, Jay with the fancy card.
Yeah.
You got to have one that's memorable, right? Or it was in the file with everybody else's.
Yes, most certainly. So
absolutely. So Jay, you know, they took on the Colorado Avalanche, a team that swept this Preds group in last year's playoff. Really competitive, missing a lot of players, obviously losing some players due to the trade deadline. It kind of encompassed the second half of this season post-trade deadline. Can you talk about this Preds season and how it really defined this group going forward?
Well, I'll start with the games. The last two home games against Minnesota and Colorado, I mean, those are two pretty solid teams. Colorado has built, if they're going to have a good run at the Cup again this year, a guy like Nathan MacKinnon just really took over the game. He's one of the best players in the game. And I thought it was a great measuring stick to see what we've got, how far, you know, the players have developed, how far this team has come in the last, really, it's a totally different team from opening night. The roster is completely different. So many new players on it, so many young players on it. And to be able to compete with a team like Colorado, we fought our way back into that game last night, being down 3-1, coming back, tying the game. I thought it just said great things about the fight and the culture that the coaching staff and really the culture that's been developed here since 1998, when the Preds were first announced that they were coming to Nashville. It's something that they've worked on. They've had some great people in place to nurture that, and I'm excited for next season. I'm excited for this summer. We've got the draft being held here in Nashville with a tremendous amount of draft picks. So, the management is going to be busy trying to improve, like every other team in the NHL, obviously trying to improve. But I'm really looking forward to this summer and training camp already. And most guys are tired of the season and want to have a little break, but I'm excited and very encouraged.
No, absolutely, Jay. And I think that the entire fan base is really encouraged with what they've seen. The feel around this Predators group went from, you know, it's time for them to sell off and move off this core to how exciting this young group is. The one question that really remains for me is head coach John Hines, and if he is still going to be here. We see GMs come in all the time and want to go out and get their guy to lead their team. Do you see John Hines as being safe going into this next year, or do you think that they could potentially make a move this offseason at head coach?
Well, you're exactly right. When a new management comes in, they quite often, you know, are going to address that with whoever they want to bring in, whoever they're comfortable working with. But I will tell you, because I have no idea what they're going to do, I think the coaching staff got the absolute most out of what they had to work with. They had to adapt and had to change many different times throughout the year, and with because of what they had to work with, because of so many injuries. And yeah, injuries are going to be, you know, it's a long season. Every team is going to have to go through them. But I just think that the, you know, bringing as many young players and having to nurture them and bring them along, knowing when to put them out on the ice, when to, because you're still trying to develop these kids, but you've got to put them in key situations, which normally they may not be in, because you've got veterans filling those roles. But when you lose Forsberg, Duchesne, Josi, and so many guys at the trade deadline, these youngsters were put into these situations, which is good. But from a coaching staff point of view, sometimes, you know, it's a tough pill to swallow, because you know they're going to make mistakes and it's going to cost you, you know, a goal here and there, and may be costing you a game. So I think the coaching staff did a great job. They're I would say, a very good staff for a young team like we had. And then, you know, I think we're just going to have to wait and see what how things progress over the summer, what the management decides to do.
Jay Moore is with us, former Nashville Predators defenseman and analyst alongside the illustrious voice of Pete Weber this year. Jay, this is a very young team. You just touched on it. The average age was 26 years old, and I know that you were with the team when we first started out. So when you're in that locker room and you're going into that next season as a young group, what do you think some of the biggest takeaways would be after, you know, meshing together, playing in the minors all together? What do you think these guys are thinking about going into next year?
Well, there's going to be a number of these players that are going down to Milwaukee for the playoff push down there. And I think there's probably six to seven players that are going to go down and hopefully have a good run at winning a championship in Milwaukee, which, you know, that's just all part of the development. Going into next season, it's going to be a question of when, you know, where are these youngsters in their development? Yeah, we've had a good run. They play on emotion, you know, for a couple months out of the season. But the NHL is an 82-game schedule. It's a grind. It's grueling night after night. You're going to have to probably surround these guys. You know, we've got guys that were injured. They're going to be back next season. But you've got to find that right chemistry with bringing in some veteran players. When do you sign those, you know, free agents? Are we at that point where we're going to be, you know, are we good enough to you know, get into the playoffs next season and make a statement. So that's what you know, they're going to have to address. As far as the young players go, their training, they're going to have to just train hard, because, you know, at 21 years old, your body isn't, you're not fully developed. It's tough to compete an 82 game schedule against guys that are you know, much older, physically stronger, bigger. So it's going to be a lot of work in the off season. And the guys nowadays train, you know, so hard. It's just a way of life where you just, you know, you don't really have an off season training. These guys train year round. So I would expect that everybody will come into camp next season excited, ready to prove themselves and prove that this wasn't, you know, just a good 6 or 8 week run that they had.
Jay, I got one last one here for you, kind of a quick question, because you're a former defenseman as well, and you and I talked last night about how in the second period, the Preds didn't allow any high-danger chances, which is very impressive. And when you look at guys like Jake Livingstone and Spencer Stastny, who have come in along with some other young faces as well, what have you made of this defensive core now that we've seen some guys step up here lately?
Well, you're right. That there was a night and day difference from our first period last night to our second period. And that was a tremendous team that we were playing. That, you know, they've got a lot of offense, and they ran us ragged in that first period. So the coaches made those adjustments, And I was impressed with Stastny and Livingstone with just how they handled. You watch, it was a real measuring stick to see how they handle playing against Nathan MacKinnon, who is, you know, the best forward in the league. And they adapted very well. And yeah, they got, you know, a little mistake here and there. But playing defense is not an easy position. It's probably the most difficult position on the team because, you know, when you make a mistake, it often leads to a great offensive opportunity and leads to goals against. So having these guys come in that don't have many games under their belt yet and play like they did, that's encouraging. So, I, you know, the future looks bright. And that's one thing that the Predators have always done is they've always had a pretty solid defense core. Their development of defensemen has been good, and goaltenders. You know, those two positions have been real, real solid for the Preds. So I think they've got a couple good solid young prospects in those two guys.
That was Jay Moore, former Nashville Predators defenseman and current radio analyst. Jay, we appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, Jay.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. That was Jay Moore again, current radio analyst alongside with Pete Weber. Coming up next here on Michelle and Junie, we are going to make our weekend picks. A couple of professional teams have some games going on this weekend, and me, Nick, and Frazier will all get into it coming up next. You are listening to the Michelle and Junie Show here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money. Money, money, money.
Welcome back into the Michelle and Junie Show here. Nick Keyser doing an excellent job filling in for Michelle Knezovic, who's out at a women's conference in Charlotte. We wish Michelle the best, but she is leaving it to the Hilltopper boys to take over today. And what a great show it's been, but you heard the music, Shane McMahon's theme song, Here Comes the Money.
Shane O'Mac, baby.
Shane O'Mac, the craziest. I mean, listen, WrestleMania didn't do him justice back in the day. Shane McMahon was electric. But regardless, a bunch of professional sports teams having some games in the great state of Tennessee this weekend. We are going to start with Lakers and Grizzlies. According to Superbook Sports, the Memphis Grizzlies are favored by 3.5, and the over-under is 227. I'm going to start on this pick. I like the Memphis Grizzlies in game one. The Lakers are 15-22 on the season against playoff teams. Memphis is 35-6 at home. They've been dominant there. I think they are the more deep team in this playoff series, and I think they have a little bit more offensive output than this Lakers team. So give me the Grizz, -3.5. I think they get the big win and win by about 6 or 7 in this matchup.
Oh, okay. Well, here's where I'm going to differ. I do think with the rest that the Lakers have, I think they will take game one. It will be a narrow margin. I do think they will split games one and two. But I'm going to take the Lakers for game one, if it's me. Hmm. I think that is a favorable matchup. It's a pretty close game. You know, when you look at, you know, the Sacramento Kings, you know, I do like the Sacramento Kings. I do have an affinity for that team now. But give me the Lakers over the Grizzlies in game one.
So straight money line. You're saying they're winning the game. Not +3.5. Stamp it down. LA goes into Memphis on Sunday. 2 p.m. tip-off, come watch at Nobles, and they get the win against John Morant and the Grizzlies.
I'm going to say yes.
All right.
Interesting.
What a pick. Frazier.
Yes.
Who's the tiebreaker? Listen, who are you going with?
I'm rolling with the team in Tennessee, baby. Give me Memphis Grizzlies all day, every day. But here we go. I got some player props for you.
But, okay, well, you said you got the Grizzlies. Is that money line, or are you taking the 3.5?
I'm going to take them on the money line.
Okay.
I don't like the 3.5 just because it's going to be a 1-2 point game. I do have here, there is a little prop bet I have. It's the largest comeback. I do think Memphis will trail by 10 points at some degree in this game, and that is plus 480 for them to come back after trailing minus 10 points.
Okay. Interesting. Yep. Interesting. Okay, now, Frazier, I'm going to need your help a little bit on this because I'm looking at Superbook Sports right now, and it doesn't seem like they have a clear line for this game. But the Nashville SC is traveling up to New York to take on NYCFC, a team that just recently won the MLS Cup a few years ago, so a pretty formidable opponent. They're pretty close in the standings here. Give me NSC on the money line. Listen, I think NSC is a really interesting team this year. Listen, I have been watching this team for about 2 to 3 years now. Hani Mukhtar is absolutely just amazing. He is spectacular to watch. And the additions they've made on defense, I think that as the season goes and progresses, that their chemistry as a unit with some of their new players will progress as well, and they'll just keep getting better and better and be in that conversation at the end of the season. But give me NSC to get a key win on the road against NYCFC.
Okay, I like that. Well, I will also go NSC, but I want to give our fans a little bit, the fans that are out there for Nashville SC, they probably are aware that Nashville is 3-2-2 to start this year, mm-hmm. while New York is 2-3-2. So, I mean, it's going to be a close game. Because
it is an evenly matched
because
game.
Last week it was 0-0 for Nashville SC, but hopefully they're able to get a few on the board this week and take advantage of it. They do have 6 goals for this year, while New York has 7, so we will see a very close matchup, but I'm going to take Nashville SC.
Nashville SC has always been a predominantly defensive team, you know, not going to always light up the scoreboard unless Hani Mukhtar just completely takes over the game, but I would put money on Hani to have a goal in this game. Listen, last game, 0-0, it's probably a sour taste in their mouth. I see them coming out firing. Hani gets on the board with a goal. I'd put money on that as well.
All right, Frazier.
I'm right there with the both of you. I do think Nashville SC does win this game, probably a 1-0 margin, maybe 2-0. Just to the point that when they started out this season, it was kind of the, I guess, the adrenaline rush of opening day of the MLS season, playing NYCFC, winning 2-0. Now they've had, like you said, they had a little bit of a rough start with their season. It's due to a little bit of some injury bugs here and there, but I do have a little bit of some player props here. I do like first-time goal scorer to be... We can go Hani Mukhtar. It's plus 550. It's a little juicy little leg you can put there. I do have a little three-leg parlay. I have Nashville SC to have 4 shots or more on target, and Nashville SC to be plus 1 on the corner spread and over 8.5 corners. That is plus 819. You put $25 on it. Guess what? Wins you $200.
That is, listen. This is free money here on the Michelle and Jenny Show. Frazier is the gambling expert.
Ka-ching,
whenever
ka-ching.
He says something, especially about NSC, he's got a lot of connections there. I would take that with a lot of grain of salt. Now, those are the only two games that are relative here to Tennessee that we're going to be betting on. Everybody come up with your own individual pick. And for me personally, I'm going to start with a game that's near and dear to Mr. Nick Kieser's heart. And I'm going Golden State Warriors plus 1, game 1 against the Sacramento Kings. The Kings have had one of the longest playoff droughts in all of professional sports. Golden State, we know what they've been, 4 championships the last 6 or 7 years. The veteran team will get the jump on this series. I think Golden State winds up winning this series in about 6 or 7 games. It will be competitive, but Golden State takes game 1. Sacramento's going to be really hyped up for this one, and I also, even though it's a pretty big number, I like the over. I think this is going to be a really high-scoring game. Give me over 237.5, according to Superbook Sports.
Man, I can't wait to hear what – I mean, Frazier, I'll give you some time if you want to pull up some player props with this.
Go ahead.
But look, light the beam, baby. I like my Kings. Give me them in game 1. I've heard Joe Rexrose ad all week long. Please give me the Sacramento Kings, and I would take the under. It's going to be a high-scoring game. I don't think I can touch that one.
But I see this game as a potential matchup because it's so close.
Right.
You know, the Kings are a really good team, and they're very fast-paced. The Warriors are as well. They can put up a 10 points in a minute.
They could.
I see that this game could potentially go to OT.
It could, yeah.
I think it's that highly competitive. I think it's that close, and I think this Kings crowd, they're going to be at home for this first game. it's going to be electric.
Golden One has been waiting for this for a very long time, and I can tell you, like, I have family that's there, and that's why I became a fan, was because got into them, went to a game. But look, Golden One has been waiting for this for a long time. It's a great atmosphere. It's a lot. You're on top of the action there. So I think DeMontis Sabonis, man, he's going to get a double-double. I think he's going to go off. He's been, I believe he led the Western Conference in double-doubles this year, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I haven't checked that recently. But, man, he's great. De'Aaron Fox, you can rely on, you can always trust him from three.
Sabonis, interesting matchup against Draymond Green. Yeah. I think Green will be guarding him. I mean, that's the worst defender that you're going to want in your first playoff
and
run if you're the Kings.
Kevin Huerter, who knows Michelle. I think he'll be fun to watch too. So curious to see if Frazier was able to get any player props, but what do you think about that matchup?
You know, I'm kind of going a different game. I know it's kind of off script here.
That's
but
fine.
I'm going to go with the Knicks and the Cavs game. I really do like Julius Randle to get four threes today and for the Knicks to win outright.
Really?
Wow. Plus 480.
When I graduated high school in 2015, I know that was a long time ago for you young heads. Just kidding. But I started off at the University of Louisville, and Donovan Mitchell came in that same class. I've always been a Donovan Mitchell guy, and what he's done with the Cleveland Cavaliers, I would have to go with the Cavaliers in that game for me personally. You kind of want to touch in on this? We got a little bit of time. So Cavaliers, Knicks, Cleveland favored by 5.5. Give me the Cavs on the money line, but I would probably take the Knicks on the points. I think that's another close one, 4-5.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would go with the Cavs. That's the team that played against the Kings when I went. But, yeah, I think the Cavs, you know, Darius Garland's a fun guy to watch, Nashville's own, so give me them. I mean, they could be a special team here in the playoffs.
Now, before we have to go, I do kind of want to touch back on this Lakers-Grizzlies. I think this is such a great matchup for this Grizzlies team. I remember when I was younger, and they had Mike Conley, Tony Allen, Rudy Gay, Zach Randolph, Marcus Gasol. Those were some fun Grizzly teams. And I've been talking to a lot of Grizzly fans here recently about the hype around this group, you know, with Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr., you know, all these guys, Dylan Brooks. This is a solid team that has, you know, they're very versatile. They can shoot around the perimeter, which Memphis isn't used to. They can play really good defense. And what better matchup for this team to get all the viewers around the country to highlight Memphis than to take on LeBron James, one of the greatest players of all time, Anthony Davis, and the historic Los Angeles Lakers. It is such an interesting matchup, and I think it'll be great if Memphis can start this run in the playoffs by knocking off LeBron and the Lakers.
I think it will be a phenomenal matchup, but we'll see. I mean, the King is king for a reason, so we'll see if the Kings can take down the King.
So quick before we go, prediction on series in Grizzlies-Lakers, because this is going to be the last show that we have before they kick off. I'm going Grizzlies in 7. I think it goes all the way to 7, and I think Memphis wins it at home in the final game of the series. Guys, real quick, your thoughts.
Memphis in 6. That's exactly where I think it's going to go.
All right, Frazier.
I'll take Memphis in 5.
Memphis in 5. So we got Memphis in 5, 6,
why not?
And 7.
You hear that, David? David James.
David James is
five games.
David James is jumping next to his radio right now. Boys, excellent job with Michelle Knezvik being out on vacation today, guys. Thank you to Nick Keezer for hopping in. You've done an excellent job covering the Preds. Guys, that is all the time that we have today. I'm Junie Riddle here with Nick Keezer and Nick Frazier. You are listening to the Michelle and Junie Show here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
We out.